proposed list is very small. Smart.
Colleagues, members of the public, good morning. It's Monday, April 8th, 2013, and welcome to this meeting of the House Committee on Higher Education and Workforce Development. We are going to be hearing two bills today related to the issue of campus safety, House Bill 3009 and House Bill 3114. And to a large extent, they cover overlapping areas, although they take opposite positions on them. So my intention is to open both bills at the same time, and we can take testimony on both. So feel free, those of you who have signed up and are going to be speaking, to speak in favor of one and against the other. So I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3009 and open a public hearing on House Bill 3114. And now that I see I have a vice chair, I'll turn the gavel over to him and I'll come down and join Reps Esquivel and Thatcher down front.
Should we adjourn?
I'll make a vote.
You open the vote.
So they're both open.
Adjourned.
So we're just going to begin.
Which one are we on?
Okay.
You need some help, Mr. Butcher?
I've got it right here, right hand. Thank you.
I was going to say, Rep. Gilliam, who knows nothing about this, will go.
It's a left-handed gavel, and he's right-handed. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Please begin whenever you're ready.
Don't be nervous. You'll be fine.
Lady and gentlemen.
It's nice that you're reassuring.
Yeah. We have to be serious now. Come on.
For the record, Sal Esquivel, Representative District 6, Mr. Vice Chair, Mr. Vice Chair Committee. Before, in front of you, you have House Bill 3009. And what this stems from is what really triggered this with me was the individual at Western University, where he was basically got in trouble for, at first, for carrying a firearm, which he had a concealed handgun license, but then later on it was found he also had a knife of some sort on his possession. But what disturbs me is that we are, in fact, not allowing people that have gone through background checks, that have gone through a substantial amount of hoops and proven that they have, in fact, are good citizens. They do not have felons in their background, and they are very law-abiding. So what we're doing is we're trying to establish, which I've never fully understood, is a campus that may as well say, come here. Because, folks, if you're going to do something as stupid as these people do, and hideous as they do, and they're mentally ill, chances are, if you're from the outside, you're not going to go into an Army base, you're not going to go into a police station, although it has been tried. But you're opening a sign for open to allow the people that are in that, and I use this as the example. You may as well pin up a bunch of sheep and invite wolves over for dinner, because that's what we're doing with our campuses. We say, well, I don't know if we want these people to have a gun on campus or to possess a weapon, but if they have a concealed handgun license, they've done the appropriate things to get that, acquire that license. But more importantly, to take back in West Virginia, where you take Sandy Hook, as horrible as those were, they may have been prevented if someone had had a handgun. Maybe 32 people wouldn't have died in Virginia, and maybe 26 wouldn't have died in Connecticut, because they were there with no protection at all. And that's sad. That's very sad. The worst school disaster, though, was actually in Bath, Michigan, 1937. An individual, a farmer, was upset because they had raised his taxes. So he blew up the school and took 45 people with him. But what's funny about the difference between guns and explosives, no one said, let's bar explosives. They said, what's wrong with that guy? The first thing we have a tendency to do is saying, well, let's ban guns. You have so many guns in the United States now, it would be almost impossible. But more importantly, let's allow the people that are law-abiding that can handle those to do so. The thing that I object to at universities is it's our decision as a legislature, not theirs as a college, and it's very, very explicit in the law that we, the legislature, are the only ones that can say where and prohibit the use of the carrying of a firearm or a concealed weapon. With that, I'll turn it over to Representative Thatcher.
Thank you, Education Committee. This is unusual. For the record, I'm Kim Thatcher, representative from Kaiser, St. Paul, and Newburgh, and I'm so used to going before the Senate or House Judiciary Committee, so this is an unusual step. But I want to thank my colleague from Medford for bringing forward this bill. This is an issue I've been working on for a while. And he's gone over the purposes of it. But I want to point out that legally, people... responsible adults with concealed handgun licenses have been able to do this, carry on campus for decades, ever since we adopted the public building statute many years ago. In fact, I think it was 1969. So it's been about 44 years that they've been allowed to do this. And so then I would ask you to consider a question for both House Bill 3009 and for 3114, and that is, have these people created violent episodes on our campuses? I'm not aware of any single case. Looking back in history, I do remember hearing about, I don't think I was cognizant at the time in 1966, but the Texas Tower shooting in Austin, University of Austin, happened, and it was 47 years ago. I don't think Texas even issued concealed carry permits, but it was pretty common, if you can imagine, in Texas for people to be carrying concealed and openly. Unfortunately, the shooter, Charles Whitman, managed to kill 17 people, injured 32 others before police finally were able to take him out. There were several bystanders on the ground who drew their firearms to distract this gunman. And one of the cops who made it to the top of the tower later credited these civilian shooters for saving many, many lives. Then, fast forward, 4 years ago this month, Virginia Tech, about twice as many people gunned down in cold blood. The university's ban did not do anything to protect people in the school. It left them defenseless as this madman was able to methodically kill 32 people over the course of 2.5 hours. The building was a so-called gun-free zone, but that meant none of the other students or faculty could be armed or even have the ability to stop this mad gunman. In fact, it took so long for the police to arrive on the scene, and the shooter was able to stop and reload several times. I'm just suggesting that maybe a couple of the responsible, a couple of responsible gun owners and CHL holders, if they had been armed, perhaps the loss of life could have been minimized. And by the way, in both of these cases, in Texas and Virginia, I don't think under our current law they would have been able to obtain a CHL with their mental health issues and other problems. And we hear a lot about wanting to feel safe on Oregon's college campuses, but I think there's a difference between feeling safe and actually being safe. And people say Oregon's public universities are safe places to be, and I'm glad to hear it because up until recently, CHL holders have been allowed just about everywhere on the campuses in Oregon. So again, where's the problem? Take a look at one of the Oregon's public colleges, and you'll see a small city full of adults, many of whom are old enough to get a CHL, old enough to go to war, old enough to buy alcohol, many other things. Why, all of a sudden, do we feel that these responsible, law-abiding citizens who have taken the necessary steps to be approved by the government to obtain a CHL, why are they more dangerous the minute they step onto a college campus? Why do we consider them then not responsible? In downtown Portland, it's hard to tell where the PSU college campus begins and ends sometimes. If we start putting imaginary lines or gun-free zones around our campus properties, we run the risk of making criminals out of somebody just minding their own business and walking across the street and accidentally wandering onto school property. I want to mention briefly why I got involved with this, and it's similar to what Representative Espel was saying. A couple months before Virginia Tech happened, a student at Western Oregon was arrested by police, suspended from school for having a knife on him and an unloaded rifle in his pickup in the parking lot. He also had a small two-shot caliber Derringer in his pocket. 30-year-old Jeffrey Maxwell, a psychology major, served in the Marines, lived with his grandma at the time in Lebanon. He was working the night shift, caring for people with developmental disabilities to help put himself through college. The district attorney dropped all charges, saying that he committed no crime. He had a CHL and was legally entitled to carry concealed on campus. 2 years later, after a court battle, the Oregon Court of Appeals ruled that the administrative rules used by the Oregon University system to ban guns on campus violated state law, granting that type of authority only to the legislature, as Representative Esquivel was mentioning as well. Now, a few months later, OUS adopted a policy instead of a rule, which ended up prohibiting just about everyone who had a relationship with a campus from carrying. I understand the OUS policy doesn't prohibit just a random person from walking across the campus with a gun, but they wouldn't be allowed to go into any of the buildings or into the football stadium. Now, my office asked legislative counsel to review the new OUS policy last year, and they found that the higher ed board was still going beyond what state law allows, specifically for the part they try to prohibit members of the general public from possessing firearms in university buildings, sports, or performance venues and workplaces. So, I bring this up because if one of these two bills is not adopted by the 2013 legislature, and things remain the way they are today, the university system is vulnerable to another lawsuit directing them which way to go. This bill, 3009, would give them very clear direction, which is already, I would argue, in statute, but this would make it very clear to them. The last thing we want is another bout of litigation. The last one cost them $50,000 in legal fees. That would be the OUS system, and that's not even counting, I'm sure, staff and administrative time there. But finally, I want to leave you with a line from it was put in the Albany Democrat Herald a day before the higher ed board adopted the new policy. They said, in the real world, citizens who, for whatever reason, carry a firearm with a state permit are no threat to anyone, and somebody armed with a gun who wants to commit a crime will not be much concerned about or even interested in a policy on the university books. And I think the same goes for the new bans we might try to impose on our CHL holders on campuses. Let's go after the bad guys and not the good guys. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Michael Dembro. I represent House District 45, that is Northeast Portland, out to Park Rose. And I present to you House Bill 3114, which, as I said before, covers some of the same ground but takes a very different position. House Bill 3114 is about reasonable and responsible local control. It will allow college and university boards to make sensible decisions with respect to gun policy and campus safety. It has two parts, one related to concealed carry, and the other with the ability of a college or university to have its campus safety officers be sworn peace officers. Colleagues, we have a long and, I believe, correct tradition of weapons not being allowed on college campuses in this country. Of the 50 states, 45 either ban concealed carry on public college campuses or leave that decision up to the individual college or university. Oregon is one of just five that do not allow concealed carry. But as you heard from my colleagues, the realization of that is a recent phenomenon. Up until a decision by the Oregon Court of Appeals in September 2011, Oregon's colleges and universities believed that they had the right to set their own gun policy. The court ruled that college or university boards could not ban concealed carry permit holders from bringing their weapons onto campus because the legislature had not given them the express authority to do so, to make such rules. What House Bill 3114 is intended to do is to address that by giving them that authority. As you know, I've taught on a community college campus for more than 30 years. My particular campus is located in what has traditionally been a low-income part of Portland. The surrounding neighborhoods have had their share of gang activity and other problems with crime and gun violence in the past. The neighborhood has had its ups and downs. But through it all, throughout those 30 years, our campus has been an oasis of calm and civility. We've never had a shooting on campus. It has been a place where people of all races and economic classes could come together and grow together. For me as a teacher and for my students, it meant a lot that our college board had chosen to allow my classroom to be a gun-free zone. I believe that my right to teach and my students' right to learn in an atmosphere free of the potential intimidating presence of weapons was at least as important as the right of those who wanted to carry their weapons on campus. Because take my word for it, knowing that there is a student in class with a loaded weapon has a chilling effect on discussion and debate. It has a chilling effect. My students know it, and I know it. I'm not going to say that prohibiting weapons in every instance is necessarily the right decision for every campus. I can certainly imagine sensible policy that would allow individuals with protective orders to carry, or perhaps trained off-duty police officers to be given the same ability. But I do believe that this should be the decision of the individual school on where they come down on this issue. You'll probably hear that giving this authority to individual campuses will create a patchwork environment that responsible firearm owners will find difficult to negotiate. Well, colleagues, we have that patchwork system right now. Anytime a person carrying a weapon steps on the grounds of a private college or university or school or any other non-public place, he or she has to determine whether or not he or she has the right to carry. It comes with the territory. Colleagues, I know you're going to hear from some that any restriction on open or concealed carry is against the Constitution. That is simply not true. You know, the authoritative Supreme Court decision that was made in 2008, Heller versus Washington, D.C., where the majority opinion written by Justice Scalia — there are probably few greater supporters of the Second Amendment than Justice Scalia — wrote the following: like most rights, the right secured by the Second Amendment is not unlimited. From Blackstone through the 19th century cases, commentators and courts routinely explained that that right was not a right to keep and carry any weapon whatsoever, in any manner whatsoever, and for whatever purpose. Although we do not undertake an exhaustive historical analysis today of the full scope of the Second Amendment, nothing in our opinion — and remember, their opinion overturned the ability of Washington, D.C. To ban all handguns — nothing in our opinion should be taken to cast doubt on long-standing prohibitions on the possession of firearms by felons and the mentally ill, or laws forbidding the carrying of firearms in sensitive places such as schools and government buildings. Okay? Schools and government buildings, or laws imposing conditions and qualifications on the commercial sale of arms. As you may know, that that decision was followed up a couple of years later in the McDonnell versus Chicago decision, in which Justice Alito this time wrote for the majority. And he, and I'll quote, "It is important to keep in mind that Heller, that is that previous Supreme Court case, while striking down a law that prohibited the possession of handguns in the home, recognized that the right to keep and bear arms is not, quote, a right to keep and carry any weapon whatsoever, in any manner whatsoever, and for whatever purpose. We made it clear in Heller that our holding did not cast doubt on such longstanding regulatory measures as, quote, prohibitions on the possession of firearms by felons and the mentally ill, laws forbidding the carrying of firearms in sensitive places such as schools and government buildings, et cetera, et cetera." Colleagues, the professional organization that, represents campus safety professionals, the International Association of Campus Law Enforcement Administrators, has taken a strong position against concealed carry on campus, and you have their, report in front of you on the dais. It's also on OLIS, and I'll quote, "There is no credible statistical evidence demonstrating that laws allowing the carrying of concealed firearms reduce crime. In fact, the evidence suggests that permissive concealed carry laws generally will increase crime," end quote. They go on to demonstrate that college campuses are almost always very safe environments, with gun violence at a fraction of what it is in the general population, in part due to the fact that loaded weapons are generally prohibited on college campuses. Certainly we know of tragic exceptions, and Rep. Thatcher mentioned one of the most tragic, the 2007 tragedy at Virginia Tech. But would that situation have been less tragic had there been concealed carry on that campus? That tragedy has been studied exhaustively by experts from around the country, and I would recommend to you the book-length analysis by the Blue Ribbon Review Panel that the governor established after the tragedy. That panel was chaired by Tom Ridge, the former head of the Homeland Security Department, and it included a number of professionals. And they found that had there been students with concealed weapons there, it likely would have made law enforcement's efforts more difficult. And as one of their recommendations, and I'll quote, "The panel recommends that guns be banned on campus grounds and in buildings unless mandated by law." They also recommended that the universities professionalize their public safety operations in various ways. And that leads me to the second part of House Bill 3114, which would allow individual community colleges and OHSU to designate some or all of their public safety officers as sworn peace officers, as long as they had the appropriate training at the DPSST. You'll notice I didn't mention universities, OUS. The only university I mentioned was OHSU, and that's because in 2011 we passed Senate Bill 405, which gave the universities that authority. That bill did not include OHSU, nor did it include the community colleges, and that's why it's included in this bill. Colleagues, giving our institutions of higher education these two tools, regulation of concealed carry and the ability to enhance their professional public safety operations in ways that fit their local needs, will make our campuses more secure places to learn. I urge an aye vote.
Thank you, representatives, for clear presentations on touchy subjects. A follow-up, and then open it up to some questions up here.
Representative Esquivel, District 6 again, Medford. I understand that in the tragedy in Connecticut that there was 40-some laws broken. We really don't think that the individual would have cared if there was another one, do we? Wouldn't have made one difference. You can do all you want on prohibiting people. But like your campus, I'm going to tell you something right now. If a gang wants to go in there and wreak havoc, they can do it at any time. As for the police in West Virginia, when it takes as long as it took those people to get there, you may as well not have a police force. Pure and simple. Thank you.
Other comments from down there? Or shall, okay. Rep. Gorsuch, you have a question.
Rep. Escobar, couldn't we say that about any laws that we enact?
Sure. But I'll tell you what, if you had a deterrent sitting next to you, maybe you wouldn't do it.
But, you know, we have police officers, we give them power, we give them laws. We can't just assume that every law we pass doesn't work, can we?
No, we can't assume that they all work as well.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? I just want to say personally that this debate, not just in this room, but this whole subject, often feels to me like a religious debate. There are believers and non-believers in various things, and it's so hard to bridge the gulf. And I appreciate what you're all bringing here and what we're trying to decide and trying to thread the needle on a really sticky subject. So thank you very much.
One more thing. I want to reiterate that guns have been in our schools for decades, and there have not been incidents from the law-abiding. So thank you.
Okay. Thank you. I imagine we have some people signed up to testify. Chair Dembro, do you want to call these folks up, knowing who or...
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Can we have Gary Weiss, Mark Callahan, and Tim Cowan, please? And gentlemen, we have a lot of people here, so I'm going to ask everybody to try to keep it down to about 3 minutes, okay? Thank you.
You guys can go first.
Good morning. My name is Gary Wise. I live in Monmouth. Members of the committee, I thank you for having this this opportunity to speak. In 2009, or first of all, I'm going to say that I'm for House Bill 309, and I'm opposed to some of House Bill 314, or I'm sorry, 3114. I live in Monmouth, and in 2009, Jeff Maxwell was arrested and cited for felony carrying of a firearm on Western Oregon University campus. And several days later, the district attorney decided that he would not prosecute. And he says there was an arguable violation. Of course, that was his terminology as an attorney to protect his client, which was the district attorney's office. There was no arguable violation. Oregon Revised Statute 166.370, subsection 3, says that the law does not apply to a person with a concealed handgun license. Oregon Revised Statute 166.262 says a peace officer may not arrest or charge a person with a concealed handgun license for these violations. The district attorney said there's an arguable violation, but he was discovering his staff because two district attorney deputies said that the Monmouth police that they should cite him and release. The House Bill 3114 says that we should create police departments and swear these officers in on the campuses. But I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the arrest of Jeff Maxwell. If these people in the universities can't do any better than the Monmouth Police Department did that day, I would say I don't want them to have police and sworn officers on the campus. I have the reports at home. I paid for them. I will provide them for anybody who wants them. My telephone number is on the sheet. I will not put them on OLIS because I don't want to embarrass the officers. I paid for that stuff, and I'm going to keep it. I'll give it to you if you want it, but as long as you keep it reasonably private. Three police sergeants reviewed Oregon Revised Statute 166-370 and concluded that Mr. Maxwell committed a felony. Three sergeants back in the office, and they can't read the law and understand it? Are they so poorly trained that they can't read English? Subsection 3 says it does not apply to a variety of people, like deputy sheriffs and concealed handgun licensees. You know, as a citizen, I resent this. I'm paying taxes. I obey the laws, and yet you can't obey the law and not get arrested in this state. I'm very disappointed and insulted because of that. I am not carrying my handgun with me today. It's in my car. And I'm not carrying it because I resent that I have to have it in this state. We should be talking about mental health and funding, but we're not. There's 175,000 people who are licensed in this state, and I'll bet that we have a better record of obeying the law than all of the police officers that are sworn in this state. There's been several.
Thank you for your testimony.
Is that the end of it?
Yeah, it is.
Can I say one more thing?
Yes.
I have the OSU policies, Oregon University System policies, on OLIS. I was going to read some of them, but since you want to,
yes,
allow other people to speak, that's fine. I think I pretty much said what I feel. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Weiss. Mr. Callahan?
You can go first. That's fine. I'm sorry.
Okay. Mr. Callahan?
Chairman Dembro, committee members. My dad taught me when I was in high school that when I went out on a date, that the young lady I was taking out the date on the date.
I'm sorry. Could you identify yourself for the record,
sorry.
Ms. Cowan? Sorry.
Tim Cowan. That I was to return her the same way her father would expect me. I'm a retired major in the Army, and I'm a retired senior vice president for First Interstate Bank. I have a daughter who's an actress. She's in Days of Our Lives. She was nominated as the best leading actress in the film Newport Beach. When she was in high school, there was a gentleman who was pounding on her window trying to get to her at a McDonald's drive-thru. I have a son that is a police officer here in town. He served in Bosnia, Gulf, and Iraq. And I have a son that teaches elementary school. What I would like to know is they would risk their lives to take care of someone's daughter. And I think that should be a tool that they have. If they both have concealed weapons, and obviously it's a police officer, a tool of last resort to protect somebody's daughter. And one last thing, you never know what's going to happen with somebody when they're on drugs. My sons are big, they're strong, they were athletes, but they couldn't take on somebody who's on drugs. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, may I thank the gentleman to my right for his honorable service in our defense. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Weiss. Yes, Mr. Callahan.
Good morning, representatives. Mr. Chairman, my name is Mark Callahan. I'm a gun owner, NRA member, and I live in South Salem. I'm here today to advocate for House Bill 3009 and against House Bill 3114. As I stated in the previous Senate hearing last Friday, April 5th, against Senate Bill 347, the Second Amendment to the U.S. Constitution states that the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. The word infringed, according to most thesauruses, is synonymous with the words encroach, meddle, restrict, and violate. In regards to House Bill 3009, to which I support and encourage a yes vote on, provides for certain persons with the right to possess a firearm on college or university grounds, inclusive of CHL holders. I support this bill because, unlike other bills heard last week, it does not strip a citizen's right to defend themselves away from them, nor does it create a gun-free zone. As you're aware, the killer in the Colorado movie theater shootings purposely sought out a gun-free zone movie theater to carry out his acts of terror. Gun-free zones are a bad idea. By eliminating a citizen's right to defend themselves against those that would cause harm, death, and terror to us all. With all due respect to our men and women serving in law enforcement, I'm reminded of the old saying, when seconds count, the police are minutes away. In regards to House Bill 3114, this is left-wing extremist liberal government elitism at its worst. This is a long 66-page bill specifying the provision of a police department at OHSU and what the operating requirements are. But hidden on page 65, section 71, where we didn't think they would notice, relating to nothing else in the bill, is a section authorizing any college or university in Oregon to ban concealed carry, including by those who are licensed. This is truly despicable behavior, Representative Dembro. The very fact that the sponsors of this bill won't even put their individual names on the bill tells me that the citizens of Oregon and the citizens of Oregon, that they are too chicken to be accountable for those that are supposed to be representing us for fear of consequences at election time.
I think this behavior violates
when they are trying to get reelected. When the government has gone from representing the people to representing lust for power and self-interest of those being reelected.
I agree with Representative Greenlick. This is not
Mr. Callahan, we need you to please temper your remarks and not call names of call anyone names.
I'm not
including people
anybody
up here on the
specifically Representative.
One was coward.
I said chicken, actually.
Okay, chicken.
Okay. You have another minute.
This kind of
Ms.
behavior
Callahan.
Doesn't serve
no.
that
it does
any
not.
Cause well.
Colleagues, violent criminals will not follow this law if passed. That's why they're criminals. Please vote no on House Bill 3114. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Callahan. Any questions of this panel? Okay, thank you, gentlemen. Okay, I'll call up Toby Dietrich, Sarah Finger McDonald, and Zeph Schaefer, please. Welcome. Toby, you want to start?
My name is Toby Dietrich. I teach physics at Portland Community College. I am in here to in support of House Bill 3114 and against the other House bill. I want to tell you about something that happened to me as a teacher at Portland Community College. I was in class one day, and a student told me that they were a gun enthusiast, and they mixed their powder to a certain accuracy. 2 weeks later, after being frustrated with his physics work, he burst into one of my classes, my other classes, not his class, and ranted and raved and threatened to point his gun at me. And subsequently, I had to submit a student of concern report. I went to the dean, and they said, yes, this person has had problems before. We know he has a concealed weapons permit, and he may be carrying a weapon. During a active shooter drill, he refused to obey the teacher, and he said because I carry a weapon, I would go out and shoot the something or other. And so it turns out that the school, I didn't know that students could carry guns if they had a weapons permit. I didn't know the faculty could carry guns if they had a weapons permit. This is just in line with all the other people in the state of Oregon, the majority of the people in the state of Oregon, who do not realize that there are guns in our classrooms. So the end result was I demanded that he be removed from my class because I couldn't operate as a teacher knowing that there was a person in my class carrying a weapon. It was volatile, unstable, and it demonstrated the possibility of using the gun. This today's Oregonian says that the gun is the equalizer. Allowing students to carry guns in class equalizes them and allows them to bully the teachers. I could not feel comfortable telling this person that he was flunking, knowing he had his hand inside of his shirt, possibly on a gun. So I think along with the majority of the people in Oregon that I talk to, who think it's absolutely absurd to allow students to carry guns in class, I support that bill. The second thing about that bill is that public safety officers have to respond to active shooters without a gun. And to me, this is a workforce safety issue because, for example, if I was to be hired by a window washing company and they said I could not wear a safety harness, I wouldn't want to work for them. If we banned steel-toed shoes in the workplace, that would be ridiculous. The gun to the public safety officers is a safety issue, and so I support that aspect of the bill. One last thing is that this argument about guns is often say, for example, a married couple arguing over some issue, and one person happens to be very loud, and the other person is a little more timid and not as well outspoken. Just because these people are loud does not mean they are right.
Thank you, Toby. Ms. McDonald.
I'm Sarah Finger McDonald. I live in Corvallis, and I teach at Oregon State University, and I went to Virginia Tech. I support Bill 3114, and I'm adamantly against Bill 3009. When I spoke with my daughter's babysitter the other day and told her that I was coming to Salem today to testify at this hearing, and we discussed the bills that were being considered, she turned to me with a shocked look on her face. She's an OSU student, and said, "People could carry guns on campus. That doesn't make me feel safe." Another student of mine who, from reading our local newspaper, realized that I was a member of Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America, came to me at the end of last quarter. He's a former student. He wasn't in my class at the time, and wanted to talk to me about gun safety legislation. He's a gun owner. He's a sport shooter. And during our conversation, he said, "You know, I'm very comfortable shooting guns, but I am not trained to deal with a crisis situation. And I don't see any reason for anyone to carry a gun on campus." As an alumnus of Virginia Tech, I think we really need to learn from that community. The students who survived the shooting at Virginia Tech and the parents of the victims at Virginia Tech did not become advocates for arming faculty and students. Many of them have become strong advocates for banning guns from campuses and have worked very hard for stricter gun regulations. And in fact, Virginia Tech University, rather than choosing to arm people on campus, established a Center for Peace Studies and the Prevention of Violence. They're looking at ways to solve the problems of violence rather than adding guns to their community. The first leader of that center was Jerzy Nowak, who was the head of the horticulture department where I got my degree at Virginia Tech. And his wife, Jocelyn Couture Nowak, was a French instructor and was killed in room 211 of Norris Hall along with 11 of her students. Virginia has a strong tradition of gun ownership. This is not a state where guns are unusual. And in fact, Virginia Tech has a corps of cadets. So this is not a university without a gun culture. We should learn from this community. Violence prevention policy on Virginia Tech bans and prohibits people from carrying or storing guns on campus property. There is a piece of that prohibition that allows the public safety officers to ask the person with the gun to leave. They're not immediately arrested. They're given the opportunity to leave. And there is a piece of that policy that allows people who need a gun for their jobs to carry guns on campuses. But that violence prevention policy is much like the policy that I imagine Oregon public universities enacting if they're allowed to choose to regulate guns on their campuses.
Thank you, Ms. McDonald. Thank you for coming. Zach?
Zeph, sorry. Chair Dembrough and members of the committee, my name is Zeph Schaefer. I'm a resident of Portland and a junior at the University of Oregon. I'm also a member of the Board of Directors of Ceasefire Oregon. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today in opposition to House Bill 3009 and in support of House Bill 3114. Firearms on the University of Oregon campus directly affect my life and the lives of my friends and professors. I believe it is important for members of the committee to consider carefully how students live when you decide whether universities must allow guns on campus. As students, we live in close proximity 24 hours a day, either in dorms or in shared housing arrangements. Our social lives are fluid. Friends of roommates show up unannounced and are invited in. At a weekend party, the hosts may not know half the people who arrive at the door, but will welcome them anyway. This lifestyle makes it hard to secure a gun, even assuming the owner has the maturity to make that a priority. On weekends, some students drink heavily. Parties are full of drama, and regrets the next morning are common. It makes no sense to add guns to this environment. Students will feel unsafe if campus restrictions on firearms are lifted. The plan to arm campus police is controversial, with students who worry that demonstrations or after-game celebrations can turn deadly if security is armed. Adding other guns to these situations increases the likelihood that someone will get shot. As students, we do have security arrangements that are not available elsewhere. In addition to campus police, our campus is dotted with blue beacon lights where we can call security. We have a safe ride system that anyone can use. We get orientation on how to stay safe on campus, and we get alerts about crime incidents. Unlike guns, these security arrangements don't put other people at risk. Security should be the responsibility of the university community, and it is very unwise to force Oregon colleges and universities to allow guns on campus. I urge the committee members to pass House Bill 3114 and to vote against House Bill 3009. Thank you.
Thank you, all three of you. Any questions of this panel? Okay. Thank you very much for your testimony. I'm going to call Peter Nordic up. I know you have to go teach a class, so why don't you just come up by yourself, and then I'll call the next panel.
That'll help me get less nervous.
Thank you. Welcome, Peter.
Thank you, Chair Dembrough and members of the committee. I'm Peter Nordic. I'm currently an adjunct professor at Mount Hood Community College. I'll be asking you potentially to come visit one of my classes, Representative.
Oh,
for a second.
I'd love to.
All right. I'm testifying to support House Bill 3114, and I was invited to testify by Ceasefire Oregon. Adding weapons to campus life, and I know that, I think that, well, I don't know, I'm learning that the
oh,
policy...
Oh, I'm sorry.
That was the fastest 3 minutes.
No.
And passes when you're hurrying.
All right. Adding weapons to campus life, at least in my view and my experience, would undermine the student experience in a number of ways. The first is increasing access to firearms exposes students to risk of greater violent crime from their peers. I hear a lot of talk about bad guys, but I'm having this discussion with my five-year-old that not all bad guys have red eyes, so they're not so easily identified. And when I was doing research on this, I also saw that some 40%, or maybe it was 50% of people who commit murder is their first felony. So they were a good guy right up until they were a bad guy. Two, it puts students at a much greater risk of suicide. Repeated studies have shown that suicide rate among students is actually 50% lower than their peers off campus. And in all forms of suicide attempt, except for firearms attempts, the rates are equal. So that's the one difference. Students can't have handguns on campus, and in a moment of despair after a bad exam, can't kill themselves. Or at least they have to try a lot harder than just pulling a trigger. Sorry, that was a little graphic. Excuse me. The other element, it undermines the ability of faculty to ensure a safe space for open discussion. I teach political science classes, and not everybody has the same life experience or the same opinions in the classroom. We get heated conversations, occasionally about this very issue. My students who have talked to me about being gun owners or concealed carry weapons permit holders are all under the impression that they're not allowed to have it on campus, and I believe with the student contract at Mount Hood Community College, they are not allowed to have it on campus. So if a gun owner does bring their weapon onto campus, they're not actually, I guess, technically a law-abiding gun owner, because there's that rule. And they acknowledge, most of them, that it would change the ability of the classroom to have a frank conversation. I had two instances where I've had students behave in a threatening manner, once to me after an exam, and it was a test. It was early in the term, so I was checking out who he was on Facebook, and he had two AR-15s as his little Facebook profile, so I took it seriously. Fortunately, he dropped the class, so we didn't have to deal with it at Western, oddly enough. And then the second one was a student who was a return vet, and he was kind of experiencing a PTSD episode and argued with a student he actually agreed with for a while. And we just talked after class and kind of calmed things down.
You'll have to wrap up.
Okay. All right. So it's Department of Education studies show that homicide rates among students on campus is 200 times lower than that of the general population of their peers. And I strongly support giving colleges and universities the right to maintain that safe atmosphere and local control over this issue. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Peter. Any questions? Thank you very much for coming up here. Have a good class.
Thanks.
And remember, everyone, you're more than welcome to submit any written testimony that you want to. It'll be put on the record. I'll call up Kevin Starrett, Jeff Maxwell, and Daniel Taylor, please.
For the record, I'm Kevin Starrett with Oregon Firearms Federation, and we've all been having this debate for a long time, but frankly, I'm kind of wondering what bills we're talking about here, because no one's suggesting that we introduce guns to campuses. The fact is that people have carried guns on campuses for a very long time, and you have taught there or visited there, usually didn't know it. As you know, it's been legal. The college, the university system chose to ignore that. We're the organization that sued them. They lost. So as Representative Thatcher told you, they stopped calling it a rule and they called it a policy. And we said, well, we can sue you again and then they'll call it a guideline. But the fact is that all of the things, the fears that we have about these drug-addled, drunken students who are going to break up with their girlfriends and kill each other, all of these suggestions that the fact that someone's carrying a gun, which many of them are now without your knowledge, I have to wonder why you are so convinced that this behavior is specific to college campuses. Why aren't these students shooting their girlfriends and getting drunk off campus where these prohibitions wouldn't apply? And so I just think that we should recognize that what we're talking about here is behavior that's gone on for a long time, meaning the private possession of firearms on campus. It's always been legal. And just to address a comment that was made earlier by an instructor, if you're a teacher who has a student who threatens you or behaves in a bizarre or threatening manner, we have ways of dealing with that. Right now, a sheriff can take away the concealed handgun license of anyone who he believes is a threat to himself or others. And if that is reported, I can assure you that most sheriffs are more than happy to do it. I'd also like to mention that we're not simply talking about young students who are drunk or taking drugs and fighting with their girlfriends. These prohibitions apply to everybody. These prohibitions apply to parents coming to visit, to speakers coming, to people simply walking across campus. For many years, it's been lawful for licensed people to be on campus with firearms. We haven't seen students shooting each other. And believe me, if a student wants to shoot a teacher, telling him he can't do that is not going to stop him from doing it. So what you are doing is guaranteeing that a 22-year-old co-ed who's walking across the campus at night is totally vulnerable and incapable of protecting herself, as did that young woman in Oregon City the other night. And I would suggest that you maybe consider all those angles as you move ahead. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Hello, my name is Jeff Maxwell. I'm the student from Western Oregon who was arrested falsely for concealed weapons. Basically, 3009, I see it as a way to prevent my fellow students, my fellow citizens, from having to experience the pain and the, just the, not torture, but just the experience that I've had to go through trying to get through the Oregon University system. I can no longer go to school in the Oregon University system, whether they say so, I can or I cannot. They just found other ways to keep me out. I just wanted to prevent that from anybody else happening. Legal people that are carrying, they shouldn't have any problems rolling onto campus. They're not looking for trouble. Nobody's looking for trouble. They just don't need any extra trouble because they've been stopped by the police or the security. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Chair Dembrow, representatives. My name is Daniel Taylor. This is my first time coming to Salem, so this ought to be interesting.
Welcome.
I'm here to speak in support of 3009 and in opposition to at least section 71 of 3114. I actually don't mind there being a campus police force, but I do not think that concealed handgun licensees should be restricted from carrying there. I have submitted some documents to the record, and I come to you today with a background of 14 years as a martial artist, a self-defense instructor for my friends and family, and a person who considers himself personally responsible for 43 people that I consider near and dear to me that share my beliefs that want me to speak here today on their behalf. Research is showing, generally speaking, that, and there's lots of research, I'm sure you've heard it from all angles, but the police in general are saying that due to the speed and deadliness, quoting here, of recent high-profile shootings, police departments recommend fleeing, hiding, or fighting in the event of a mass attack. I attend Portland Community College and one other university that I will not name at the moment. And I have, even during prohibitions on a campus level, known that my rights were superseded by the legislature, meaning that I could carry my concealed handgun on campus even though the university said that I could not because their prohibitions were in fact illegal. I have carried on campuses for 3.5 years. I have never caused a problem. I'm a law-abiding citizen, and I'm one of many, many students who carry on campus every single day. None of us want to be heroes. No one wants that responsibility of having to kill someone else on their shoulders. But the fact remains that the criminals don't fear the laws that we have. They don't have the teeth that they need in order to keep criminals behind bars. Making more laws may or not make that difference, but as many people have said, you know, criminals don't necessarily fear breaking one more. As CHL holders, we are self-selected individuals. We have chosen to undertake the training and the time to identify what the laws are and where they are, and to adhere to them so that we continue to be law-abiding citizens. Someone had made a point earlier about going to different campuses and having to know this place and that place, and they're posted or they're not. It's either you can legally carry until told otherwise, or you can't. Being able to respond personally to these attacks, should one occur in my classroom or on my campus, is very important to me. As a martial artist, I know that I would be unable to close on an attacker unless he happened to run right into me and do anything about someone with a firearm. I submitted also, this is the Portland Police Bureau response times as of 2011. And it shows very clearly that from the Portland Police Bureau's website that the average response time for high priority calls is 4.36 minutes to 6.92 minutes, depending on where you are at the time. The average shooting is over between 30 seconds and 3 minutes, as evidenced in Aurora, Colorado, and other places. There's a standard training mantra of the 21-foot rule that police officers taught the academy, that someone can close on you in 1.5 seconds from 21 feet away and still cause you physical harm. The document that I submitted is showing that research is further stating that the 21-foot rule should be more like the 45-foot rule because you have to ascertain the threat and decide what to do about it.
Thank you. Could you wrap up, Mr. Taylor?
Yes, absolutely. There's a couple of documents in here showing that people have lawfully used their firearms in self-defense while doing everything right, and I feel that taking that right away from citizens is legislating a crime that hasn't happened and is unlikely to.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Well done. Rep. Wisdom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize, gentleman in the middle. We don't get the list of names, but thank you for your service.
Yes.
I have two questions. In your testimony, you said you're having difficulty being served by the university system now. And can you tell me what status the Western Oregon Police Department is? Is it contract? Are they deputized by the county, the state, or who? What,
I'm unsure of Western Oregon's. Are you talking about the public safety office, or are you talking about the city police?
The people that arrested you, that was the city police.
It was the city police along with public safety officers from there.
Campus.
And I believe that because the police department is so close right there in Monmouth, that's why they were the first there to respond. As far as that goes, it took them still from the initial call from somebody seeing a pocket knife sticking out of my pocket, it took them 3 hours to find me. On campus, I was sitting around doing my homework in class. It took them quite an extensive time to find me before they could. What was the first question again?
You met your chair.
Status.
You indicated you're having difficulty attending Oregon University system because of this incident?
Correct. I have applied, and there always seems to be one little thing that doesn't. I can't quite make it through the process, the administration process.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative.
I would recommend you contact your state legislator to address that issue.
Vice Chair Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kevin, Courtney. There seems to be a lot of mystery and randomness around the conversation of CHL holders. Can you give us an idea of what kind of data is collected? Are there fingerprints? I mean, does a sheriff know who is holding concealed weapons permit?
Yes, the sheriff collects fingerprints and photographs from every applicant, and after that process starts, there's a background check. The background check checks all the possible databases that are available to the sheriffs, and after that, the sheriff can issues the license, which is renewable every 4 years. But of course, the sheriff is notified immediately if the applicant or the license holder is involved in any kind of, even an accusation of criminal activity, and then the license is seized until that's resolved. But as I said earlier, a sheriff can revoke a license without a crime if the sheriff decides that the person's state of mind makes him a danger.
Thank you.
Mr. Starrett, all three of you, my understanding is that in this state, most of the private universities and the public universities have had longstanding prohibitions as part of their policy, their university policy. Would you like to see the private colleges and universities opened up in the same way that the court case has opened up the publics?
I would very much like to see the private universities have common sense policies that allow sensible adults to protect themselves. As a supporter of private property rights, I wouldn't compel them to do that. I would just think it would be wise if they recognized how dangerous places can be that have identified themselves as basically killing zones to madmen.
So, but you're, from a legal perspective, you're comfortable with there being a double standard?
I don't consider it a double standard for public entities to obey what the legislature has told them to do. I don't see that as a double standard any more than I see it as a double standard for a business to say, we don't allow firearms, and for me as a person who runs an organization to say, if you want to come to work for me, you have to carry a firearm.
But if House Bill 3114 were to pass, they would be acting in compliance with the law. Presumably.
Yes, and that's why we're opposing the law.
Yes. Okay, thank you, gentlemen.
One quick question.
Yes.
Just as follow-up to one of the last things you said, do you actually require that anyone that comes to work for you carry a firearm?
It's highly recommended in my line of work, Representative.
Okay.
Okay, thank you, gentlemen. I'll call up Marilyn Lawrence, Tim Lowry, and Penny Okamoto.
That's what I thought.
Please.
That wouldn't be recommended. Might be needed, but it wouldn't be recommended.
Okay, Ms. Lawrence.
Thank you, Chair Dembrough. For the record, my name is Marilyn Lawrence. I'm the current legislative coordinator for the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training. Our agency, DPSST, is responsible for establishing minimum standards for employment, training, and certification of Oregon's public safety personnel, including its police officers. The purpose of my testimony this morning is to speak to the technical aspects of House Bill 3114 related to our agency's current relationships with Oregon Health and Sciences University, or OHSU, and with its community colleges relative to utilization of police officers. In general, a person comes into DPSST jurisdiction when they become employed in a certified position as a public safety officer as defined in our statutes. Currently, neither OHSU nor community colleges are covered within our enabling statutes in the area of criminal justice. But the 2009 legislature amended OHSU's statutes to allow us to provide basic training and to certify OHSU police officers. This means that OHSU officers currently meet the same minimum standards, receive the same training, and are certified just as any other Oregon police officer is. Those same legislative changes in 2009 give OHSU police full peace officer authority, but prohibit them from carrying firearms while they're on duty. Although not a direct impact to DPSST, both our governing board, the Board on Public Safety Standards and Training, and its Police Policy Committee have noted their policy concern that there is a group of certified police officers in the state that do not have the same tools that their counterparts have available to them as they carry out their duties as sworn police officers. Unlike OHSU, the security officers who work for community colleges are not currently considered public safety personnel within our statutes. They are not governed by the same standards and do not receive the same training that police officers do. They are, however, covered within Oregon's Private Security Providers Act. This is a fee-based, standalone regulatory program that is housed within DPSST. Because our relationships are different with OHSU than they are with community colleges, House Bill 3114 affects our relationship with those two groups differently. House Bill 3114 does not make any functional changes to our current relationship with OHSU. We've worked closely with them since 2009 as they transitioned their campus public safety office to a police department, and their police officers already comply with our minimum standards and receive DPSST training. But the bill would create a more direct and standardized relationship within our enabling statutes by defining OHSU Police Department and their officers as law enforcement units and as police officers, just as city, county, and other state officers are defined within our statutes. The bill also repeals the provision that requires OHSU to reimburse DPSST for the cost of their basic training, which is not a requirement for other city, county, or state police departments. Regarding community colleges, House Bill 3114 authorizes new police departments and police officers who would be subject to our jurisdiction. We would work closely with any community college that sought to establish a police department, as we did with OHSU and more recently with the University of Oregon based on the 2011 legislation affecting them.
If you could wrap up.
I sure will.
Thank you.
All of those officers would be required to take the 16-week basic police academy and then would become certified. The bill will have some effect on us in terms of scheduling and the numbers of required classes, but because there's no way to know how many colleges would take advantage of this opportunity, there's no way to be more specific about what the fiscal impact might be or the scheduling impact. I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, because she's specific, can we ask?
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you remind the committee, because I've served on judiciary, and I know what, if we fully train these officers, what's the cost per officer? It approaches over.
Chair Dembro and Representative Wisnant, I do not have that number at hand.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir, President.
Thank you. I thought it was for state police, it's over $200,000, but that's uniform and everything. Is that not true?
Chair Dembro and Representative, that would be true. And for Oregon State Police, that would also cover their pre- and their post-academies in addition to the DPSST basic cost.
One follow-up real short, and I know you got
Sure.
Okay, I don't understand because I was involved in judiciary when we authorized, I thought it was Oregon, U of O to have a police department. Do they, are
it was OUS, too.
It was?
Yeah.
Okay, do they get, how do they get their authority, through that legislation or through the deputy or the sheriff's office? Because they have to be deputized or something to have their authority to arrest and to follow out the laws of Oregon. I've had that experience in Sun River. We had a private who went to a service district. So, and then that authorizes them to then be legal.
Yes. Chair Dembro and Representative Huisnat, there were two different pieces of legislation. The legislation affecting Oregon Health and Sciences University was in 2009 and was specific to them. It amended ORS 353050, allowing OHSU officers to be treated as police officers for purposes of our statutes, and called them, said that they should be considered peace officers for Oregon statutes. 2011 legislation authorized all Oregon University system institutions to establish police departments, and University of Oregon is the only one that has done that so far.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Lawrence. Mr. Lowery.
Yes.
Introduce yourself and
members of the committee, my name is Tim Lowery, and I work as a public safety officer for Chemeketa Community College currently. I support House Bill 3114 for a variety of reasons. I believe I'm the first public safety officer to be up here. Basically, Chemeketa is the third largest community college in Oregon, with about 40,000 students on seven campuses. We have only 9 full-time public safety officers to serve this large population. As a public safety officer, we are dressed like police officers, and we wear bulletproof vests. I have a picture of myself to kind of illustrate what this is.
Oops, so no, wrong thing.
But it is a lovely.
He started being there. Yeah.
Vacation.
Oh, I thought that was your campus.
Yeah. There you go.
There we go.
So we look just like peace officers,
right.
And reasonable people in our that school students and staff believe we are, and we can operate under those rules. Our job duties, coming from background where I was a police officer and I have about 800 training hours with DPSST in the state of Oregon, I'm amazed. A lot of the duties are overlap the duties I had to do as a police officer, just in an unarmed capacity. Oregon law treats us the same as private security guards, with the exception of enforcing Oregon traffic code on our campuses. Our college has adopted 341-300, which gives us peace officer powers during a traffic stop. Even when enforcing these laws, we are told not to pull over a vehicle, but to wait for the vehicle to reach its destination, such as a parking spot, and then to confront the driver who may have some confusion about our status. Safety on our campuses would be improved if this confusion was eliminated and we became police officers under Oregon law. First, providing us with this status would be a driving force for better training through the DPSST partnership. Although many of us have peace officer background from being police officers, this is not a recurrent requirement to be a public safety officer. One of our students just recently had a heart attack, and he knows that a properly trained officer can save lives. Enhancing our legal status also allows us to perform important duties related to our scope of employment. For example, we could act on warrants when appropriate to ensure that dangerous suspects are arrested instead of allowing them on campus. We'd also gain the authority to stop a person and make a reasonable inquiry if we suspect a person on campus is about to commit a crime as allowed by ORS 131-615. Well, it's not my primary concern. This bill would also protect those of us who now serve the community college. It would give us more legal protection and performance of our duties. Instead of having basically no more authority than a private citizen, we'd be able to be protected by ORS 133-315 relating to the ability of a peace officer making an arrest. We'd also gain protection under ORS 163-208. As of now, the statute, assault on a public safety officer, does not include a community college's public safety officer.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Lowery. Yeah. And just to clarify, that House Bill 3114 would not make you a sworn peace officer. You'd still have to convince your administration that
right.
This was the right path. for your college to take.
Correct. Yeah, yeah. This is the one step moving towards that.
This was a good step. Thank you. Any questions? Okay. Ms. Okamoto.
Thank you very much. I'm Penny Okamoto. I'm the Executive Director of Ceasefire Oregon. My thanks to Chair Dembro and to all the committee members for allowing me to offer testimony today in opposition to House Bill 3009 and in support of House Bill 3114. Just to be brief, I'm going to skip over a lot of my remarks. You do have the remarks and the data in your handout that I provided. One thing that's not in there that I think is of key importance is a study done by the Journal of Urban Health in 2002 that does state that the rates of female homicide, suicide, and unintentional firearm death are disproportionately higher where guns are prevalent. Yes, sir.
Could you just move back from the microphone a little bit? Better? Thank you very much. Yes.
Okay. Sorry about that.
They're very sensitive.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Sorry about that. That was done by Miller et al. In firearms availability. Again, the Journal of Urban Health. Chair Dembro has already spoken very eloquently to the issues of the Second Amendment. Ms. McDonald, Mr. Schaefer have already spoken to incidents at Virginia Tech as well as to incidents on campus. So I will skip over that. Another important study that was the International Association of Campus Law and Enforcement Administrators has found that, quote, there is no credible evidence to suggest that the presence of students carrying concealed weapons would reduce violence on our college campuses, end quote. This was something that was done after the Virginia Tech shootings. Another thing that I would like to state is that people are very concerned about the safety of young women on campus, and we are very concerned about that as well. But you can see from the study that I just cited that the presence of firearms actually puts women at an increased risk of suicide, homicide, unintentional injury, and then, of course, also the intimidation factor of simply having a weapon. In addition, most of the women who are attacked, and unfortunately it is mostly women who are attacked on campuses, are freshmen, sophomores. They are not older students. They're usually younger students. Often they have been in a party, but one of the a tragedy upon a tragedy is that they're actually with someone and attacked by someone they know and they trust, and they're not expecting to having to be able to use a weapon against that person. One of the additional significant risks for college students is suicide, and actually I think Mr. Schaefer already spoke to this, the high risk of suicide on campus. I will leave that to the information that's in the testimony already. So Ceasefire Oregon urges a no vote on House Bill 3009, a yes vote on House Bill 3114. I hope my marks weren't too brief. I'm happy to take any questions. Thank you very much for your time and this opportunity.
Thank you very much, Ms. Okamoto. Any questions of this panel? Rep. Gorsuch.
Just one thing to go back to the assault statistics.
Yes, sir.
It's also true that we're usually in this society killed by someone we know about half the time. Is that not correct?
Yes, sir, that's actually true. Rape is actually, or sexual, any type of sexual assault is actually higher, committed by, that's a higher percentage.
So while stranger danger issues are important, the truth of the matter is that many times we know our attacker.
That's most often the case, yes, sir.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes, thank you. Thank all three of you for coming.
Thank you.
Yes. I think we have time for one more panel, and some people may have to cut out a little early. But let's hear from Greg Mowat from OHSU, Roger Beyer, and Art Crino.
Chair Dembro, members of the committee, my name is Greg Mowat, and I'm the Director of Public Safety at Oregon Health and Science University. I'm here to testify on Section 2 of House Bill 3114 and to give you a little bit of the history of Oregon Health and Science University's Public Safety Department development to the extent that it informs any decisions that you may make as to other portions of either of these bills. After the incident at Virginia Tech in 2007, OHSU commissioned a group led by Senator Jenny Burdick to evaluate our public safety, then private security department's ability to adequately respond to a major incident, a catastrophic incident on our campus. That group included members from the OHSU community, healthcare and mental health professionals, community members, and local law enforcement representatives. The task force found that the legal authority given to private security at our campus was insufficient to meet the potential needs on our campus, most specifically with regards to stop and frisk and early detention abilities given to law enforcement officers that our private security did not possess. The Portland Police Bureau testified in front of that group that response time was estimated to our campus at between 7 and 15 minutes for a major incident, which of course was too long given the brevity of many of these incidents across the United States. In response to those findings, we drafted Senate Bill 658, which was submitted in 2009 and passed by the legislature, allowing us to commission officers, send them through DPSST for training, and get them into a position where, absent the firearm, they were on the exact same footing as any other police officer in the state of Oregon. I would mention at this point that there is Senate Bill 565, which has been referred now to the House Judiciary, and which covers this much of the same area as this bill. Would ask this bill be submitted as well to the House Judiciary to make sure that those two bills are aligned. We are seeking, at this point, the ability to arm our officers. That 7 to 15-minute response time has borne out to be accurate. Certainly, there's no reason to doubt it, having been offered by the Portland Police Bureau. We have sought the ability to arm our officers, put them into a position to adequately protect our campus. We do believe that the OHSU community requires a different level of training, an enhanced level of training for our officers above and beyond what is offered by DPSST. That 16-week basic academy is a good foundation for our officers moving forward, and we do intend to establish a heightened critical incident response team training with regards to mental health, given our level one trauma center, our inpatient mental health unit, as well as our emergency department, which of course is one of the greatest generators of risk for our campus. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Roger Beyer. I'm here representing the National Rifle Association of America in support of House Bill 3009 and in opposition to House Bill 3114 as drafted. ORS 166-170 is known as the state preemption statute, was originally acted in 1995. I will read subsection 1 of that statute. It says, except as expressly authorized by state statute, the authority to regulate in any matter whatsoever the sale, acquisition, transfer, ownership, possession, storage, transportation, or use of firearms, or any element relating to firearms and the components thereof, including ammunition, is vested solely in the Legislative Assembly. Mr. Chair, that statute seems fairly clear to the members of the National Rifle Association, but apparently state colleges and universities, some have found it to be unclear, and they have tried to regulate the use of and possession of firearms on those campuses. ORS 166-170 implies, this is in current law, we wouldn't need House Bill 3009, but this bill, as we see it, does not change current law. It just codifies that in ORS 166-370, what we believe is already current law in ORS 166-170. Mr. Chair, on House Bill 3114, NRA has no objection to allowing colleges and universities to have police departments. Our specific objections to this bill are contained in Sections 71, 72, and 73. These sections expressly allow these public universities, community colleges, and OHSU to prohibit law-abiding citizens from having firearms on their grounds or in their buildings. This would put us right back to the past where gun owners would not know from one college to the other what the policy might be and could be in violation of the policy simply by having a firearm. Sections 71 through 73 of this bill are direct assault on state preemption and do nothing but target law-abiding citizens. NRA could support House Bill 3114 if amended so that Sections 71, 72, and 73 are deleted from the bill, and the bill simply allows public universities, community colleges, and OHSU to create and arm police departments. Thank you very much for your time. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Beyer. Mr. Cruno.
Chair Demerill and other members of the committee, my name is Art Cruno. I appreciate this opportunity. I'm from Tigard. I'm basically against 3114 and in favor of 3009 as written. I believe we've given the concept of gun-free zones a good test, and it has not been satisfactory. A classical example is comparing Chicago to Houston. They're both about the same population, same average income, about the same amount of minorities. Houston is a classical city with concealed carry allowed, lots of places to buy guns, and thank you, Walmart, so forth. Yet, Chicago is a gun-free zone, in effect. And the per capita homicide rate in Chicago is three times of Houston. Some years ago, Professor John Lott wrote a book, said, more guns, less crime. I believe he should write a book now, or somebody, saying more regulations, more crime, because that's the way I see it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Crino. Any questions of this panel?
Mr. Chair, could
Yes, Ms. Meyer.
Briefly, you have testimony submitted by Denise Remmer, who is a parent of a Western Oregon University student who was sexually assaulted on campus. It's in your record. I appreciate you taking time to look at it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, sir. Okay, thank you, all three of you. Colleagues, we're out of time. I know the meeting's at 10. Those of you who didn't have the chance to testify, I apologize. And please do feel free to submit written testimony or send emails or whatever if you feel that your points were not covered today. Colleagues, when we're on the floor, I'm going to come around and try to get a sense from you of where you want to go with these bills. This afternoon is the deadline to post work sessions, so if you have questions about your bills and their fate in this committee, let's double check on those too. Okay. So with that, I'm going to close the public hearings on House Bill 3009, close the public hearing on 3114, and we are adjourned.